We'd like to introduce a new member of our panel. This is Ms. Barbara Jordan from Houston, Texas, an attorney who is running for the Texas legislature for the second time.
That's right.
And we want to wish you better luck this time than last time, Barbara.
Thank you. I'll need it.
Are you a candidate with a good chance for victory, or are you running to serve a purpose?
No, I'm running to win. There are some people who have asked whether or not you're after being another first, whether you're just making a token effort, and I tell them that I am there to win. And I think the political climate in Texas has significantly changed so that my chances, even though I recognize that the fact of being a Negro and being a woman is perhaps going to cost me...
And a third attorney, you're a lawyer, don't forget that.
And a lawyer. It's going to cost me a few votes, but I have a feeling that I can win and that I will at this point. Unless something happens.
Is the district in which you are campaigning a goodly sized Negro community? Or are you depending mostly for white votes for your...
Really, I'm depending on votes from everywhere. Now, the district that you're talking about is really Harris County, which is Houston, Texas, and a few, say, bedroom communities. This metropolitan area has over 1 million citizens in it, and I will be running, say, countywide. And if elected, would have to represent this better than 1 million citizens in the county.
What percentage of that million is Negro?
The percentage of that that is Negro is about 25%, roughly 250,000 a Negro. Now, of course, there are 361,000 qualified voters there, and of this, about 70 or 80,000 a Negro. So you can see I'll need Negro and white support, but I have a feeling that I'll get it because I got this combination of support 2 years ago, and I know that I have maintained it.
What has been the reaction for your to your campaign? Has the press treated you? Have you kindly? Have you been subjected to any abuse, more so than the ordinary political figure?
This is the most significant indication of the climate having changed in the state. The press is extremely fair. As a matter of fact, since I'm not in Houston, I can say that I am expecting an endorsement from one of the leading daily newspapers there. The editorial staff fought for it 2 years ago and were unsuccessful because the paper felt it would lose some circulation, and this was the only reason. But now I think this endorsement will come through. Another thing that I think is significant, when I announced 2 years ago, I did get a few what we call nut calls. People saying, you know, why do you want to do this? And very derogatory remarks being made. And this time, I haven't received one call from these kind of people. So I have a feeling that things are in fairly good shape in the state.
Barbara, you taught at Tuskegee University in Alabama.
For a while.
Mm-hmm. And a short time ago, Governor Wallace of that state was a guest on our show. And in defense of his position, he said that he did a lot for the Negro institutions in Alabama in his effort to give equal but separate education. Would you agree with that analysis, that he did do much in raising funds or contributing or having funds contributed to educational institutions that were strictly Negro?
Well, of course, he did what he should have done to try to maintain a reasonable, progressive system of education in the state for his citizens. Now, as for how much he did, I think that this is, of course, subject to question, because the situation that existed at Tuskegee at the time that I was there was so deplorable as far as freedom of expression on the part of the employees of that school. And he had just sort of instilled the fear of, I won't say the fear of God, I guess the fear of Governor Wallace in the people there, so that there was just not this freedom of academic expression or freedom on the part of the teachers to really teach, to really educate and inform. And I think that this situation is, of course, deplorable and far outweighs any effort that he would make finance-wise to put money into these schools. Now, of course, his saying that he had done so much for Negro schools goes back to this kind of paternalistic attitude, you know.
Separate but equal
concept. Separate but equal, and we'll take care of you, this kind of thing, which is just no longer a tenable position.
There is a Negro, Paul Zuber, a New York attorney, who's running for president on some ticket or independent. Do you think this helps the Negro cause, or do you think it hurts it? Is it self-defeating, or is it helpful?
I think it hurts, really. There, as I see it, is no merit in a third party, or a black party, as some of them call it, coming into the whole arena of politics when we have two duly constituted parties that are working, I think, effectively. The exchange between them is effective, and the purpose of the Negro can best be served if he becomes an effective force within the existing party structure, not go off and create a third one. And
you're talking as a practical politician, but you have nothing against a third party arising in this country for some other reason.
No, I suppose I would not have any strong feelings against a third party arising in this country. History tells us it wouldn't develop to meaningful force, but I have no feeling along the lines of a third party, except I am opposed to the idea that has been advanced, particularly in New York, and that's where it started, that Negroes should form their party and offer candidates for public office because we cannot get fair treatment in either the Democratic or Republican parties. Now, this is the idea that I am just opposed to.
What about that tenet that they can't get fair treatment in either party? Would you adhere to that?
Well, I disagree in this sense. We understand that the history of the Democratic and Republican parties and the way the Negro has tried to operate through the party structure indicates that for a time he was perhaps used as an instrument of the hierarchy of the parties. But as time has progressed and this country is, I think, beginning to recognize that here is a force that is to be dealt with on a basis of equality, and that the only answer to what has sometimes been referred to as the Negro Party is a kind of exact and unremitting justice, as this becomes sort of the feeling of the time, Negroes are moving into the existing party structure so that they can be effective within these parties. And I think that this is the way that it should be. Sure, the time has been when they just were not recognized and could not be effective in either party. But I think that this has changed. I know it has changed. And in time, it will be, the Negro will be able to function within the existing party structure as any other person functions within this structure.
How about the complaint by some leading Negroes and some leading whites that the whole civil rights movement has sort of gotten out of hand, and that the leaders are running to catch up with the people, that there are no real leaders here, the people are running so fast that the leaders can't catch up to them? Are you concerned about this condition? Is this condition even true?
I'm not sure that this condition is true. I don't think that the civil rights fight has gotten out of hand. In some communities, the leader is trying to catch up with the people, so to speak. But the movement, I think, in a large measure, has been conducted by responsible people, and they have certain ends in sight, certain ends that they want to achieve. Some are in sight, and some, of course, are not in sight. And they are working to as best as they can to achieve these kinds of desired ends, I think, in a responsible way. The movement thus far has not gotten out of hand, but of course we've had persons taking what I would say might be called extreme positions in the whole movement in certain locales. It has gotten out of hand, perhaps, but say the whole movement itself has not gotten out of hand as I see it.
As a Negro, I feel and I think you should be mighty proud of what has happened in the in this whole revolution, which is of a very short duration.
Well, as a Negro, I'm proud, and as an American citizen,
right.
I'm still
more proud
of what has happened.
The whole civil rights thing seems to start with President Harry Truman. When Forrestal, your man, about whom you wrote the biography, was Secretary of Defense, isn't that when Truman gave the order to integrate the armed forces? Was this under Forrestal?
Yeah, it was under Forrestal.
This is about 47.
My recollection is I'm not. I'm not.
Did Forrestal take any position? Was he pro? Was he anti?
As far as I know, he was pro.
He was pro. Yeah.
He got an award for brotherhood from one of the civil rights organizations about that time. So he was certainly in favor of this, as far as I'm aware. He also had the distinction of fighting the admirals on promotions of the Jews to admiral rank in the Navy. Navy brass being generally not in favor of that. And he promoted Zacharias, for example, over the objections of the Navy Board of Admirals and so on. So on these questions, he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Who is the outstanding Negro in America today, would you say, in this whole civil rights movement?
Well, I think unquestionably that Martin Luther King is the outstanding Negro in the revolution. I think King's leadership has developed into the most stable of all of those that have come forth. I might, of course, find some people who would disagree with this assessment, because people like Athol Randolph and Charles Wilkins and
Roy Wilkins.
Roy, I mean,
he's been in this for a long time.
In this fight for an awful long time. And I think they have certainly provided tremendous, great leadership in the whole movement. But as far as the...
It's really a youthful movement, though.
It is.
The young people, the Martin Luther Kings and the young James Farmer and people like that, the head of the new organizations.
The new organizations are sort of spearheading the fight now. And the leadership of Southern Christian Leadership Conference is really being recognized as top leadership.
Are you concerned about Cassius Clay revealing that he is a member of the Black Muslims?
Well, I certainly am concerned about his being a Black Muslim. Because he is one, I'm glad he revealed it so that everybody can know that this is the man that we have who has the title of the heavyweight champion. I think this is most unfortunate that a man who will be in a position to create an image, to inspire, would be a person who is a member of the Black Muslims. This is most unfortunate. But of course, that's the situation. Nothing to know about it, but I'm glad he...
This is really a condemnation of the Black Muslim, but a man's got a right to be a member of any organization
he has
he
a right
chooses.
To be
but
a member. Yes, and of course, this is a condemnation of the Black Muslims, because this is the way I feel about them. Clay, I don't really think that he is aware of
what
they are talking about or what their movement is all about.
I don't think he has the slightest conception of the dangers involved.
Right. He's just...
I heard him speak.
Different.
I was in Miami for the fight, and I heard him speak to some of the press there about what it meant. And to him, it just meant that the women were very circumspect. They wore long dresses. There's no smoking or drinking and nobody fooling around with narcotics. He says, you don't find that with the Black Muslims. But he knew nothing about the serious aspects of this movement.
Not at all.
And his father is very vicious and very upset about this whole thing, and he blames Malcolm X for brainwashing Cassius Clay. Malcolm X is his constant companion, so you can see that's probably true.
Yeah.
This is constant companion.
Hmm?
He's his constant companion, Malcolm X.
Yes, he's always. What else is happening with the Negro movement today that you're proud of or you're concerned about?
Well, I'm
outside of your own campaign, of course.
I'm primarily concerned about the what I consider an awareness of political power and what it can mean to the whole movement and advancement of the Negro. For a long time, the emphasis has been on things concerning education, and the emphasis is still here in jobs and housing, and these are problems. But the Negro today is recognizing that if he can amass a kind of political power and place into office, or help place into office, public officials who set policy as far as these problems are concerned, that a number of them will be solved, that he will experience relief through an exercise of effective political power. And I see this as more significant than any other phase of the whole movement. It is a source of self-help. It's you don't have to, say, beg for the right to vote. In a number of places you do, but this is one that you can sort of walk out and take a hold of and go in there and exercise. And I think that with this growing awareness of what political power can mean, that the whole movement is going to be advanced as a result of it. I really have this feeling. So if I was to say any phase of the whole thing that was more significant than another phase of it, it would be this kind of political awareness.
Did you want to ask her something, Mr.
No,
Barrett?
No,
I'd like to ask you about your attitude about the president's desire as a Democrat and as a woman to bring more women into government. He's probably doing a great job for womanhood.
Well, he certainly is. It is unfortunate that you men for a long time have felt that women could not exercise judgment in public offices or offices of high place, if you call it that. Mr. Johnson, I think, sees that a woman of quality is as valuable in the administration as a man of quality. And he, on this basis, is bringing women into the administration, which I think is really tremendous. Women have a great deal of power in this country that they have not used. They outnumber men, of course, as well known, but...
Control the purse strings, as everybody knows.
But they have never actively participated in politics to any great degree, and they have never sought these appointive positions and elective positions, but now they are becoming aware of this latent or this sleeping giant of theirs that they've never desired to use, I suppose, and it's a good thing that Mr. Johnson is getting on this program.
On the other side, I think it's very heartening that Senator Chase, Margaret Chase Smith, is a candidate and exercising her womanly prerogatives.
I certainly do, too. I think that this indicates to women that we at least can think in this direction. And I'm sure that there are some men who feel that a woman shouldn't even consider the presidency of the United States as an office that she should fulfill. But Senator Chase Smith has let us know that this is something that a woman can aspire to, you know.
Very impressive candidate, I would say. Wouldn't you, Warren?
She has my vote.
Nobody votes in Texas here, but you certainly are going to win if we're any judges.
Well, I wish you were down there to vote for me.
Right now, I have to say goodnight. Will you folks pardon me a second? And so, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of another Cups show, in the course of which we've had an opportunity to hear from Henry Ford II, making one of his very rare appearances on television, Hugh Downs, Warren Beatty, Arnold Rogo, Arthur Penn, William Barrett, and Barbara Jordan. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, among our guests will be Senator Margaret Chase Smith, Fletcher Knebel, author of 7 Days in May, Governors Otto Kerner of Illinois and Matthew Welch of Indiana, Sid Caesar, who will be starring here in Little Me, and opera star is A. Stevens. Irv Kupsnitz saying good night and see you next week.